I never asked for this. What a shame. Yeah, rip. My vision is augmented. Green, greasy, greasels, 0451. Tim, have I missed any memes? I'm trying to do all the memes up front.
God, JC, a bomb.
Of course. How did I not do that one? The best one of all. Hello, everybody. This is going to be... Oh, my God. Tim's put some appropriate shades on. That was terrifying. I didn't have the camera image up at that point, and then suddenly it was there.
That's okay. My vision is augmented.
It's like they just suddenly flipped around from the side in Adam Jensen style. Yes, this is the Deus Ex special podcast, everybody. Specifically, Mankind Divided special, although I'm sure we'll be referencing other Deus Exes throughout the course of this. That's pretty inevitable. We kind of already have with, oh my God, JC, a bomb. it's kind of rare for us both to have played through a major title in full. I think so. It seems like a good idea to dedicate a whole podcast to it. We have no spoiler policy, so all spoilers are fair game. If you have not finished Deus Ex Mankind Divided and don't want to stop fucking with your sunglasses, Tim. Doing the spoiler bit. you get the idea.
There will probably be spoilers.
There will be. There's going to be spoilers. So if you haven't finished it and you don't fancy hearing those, then,
I will.
Come back to this when you have, please.
Yeah, I would recommend that. I will probably, before we go into spoiler territory, or if I'm about to say something that's a spoiler, I will probably say, going into spoilers, you'll get a brief warning, but...
I won't.
Yeah,
I'm just going to do it.
So basically, if you haven't finished it yet, fuck off.
Yeah,
it's been out for a couple of days. What have you been doing?
Yeah, you've had like two whole days, probably three whole days by the time this goes up. Honestly, I finished it in four, I think.
Admittedly,
it was a weekend. I did kind of blitz it for about 12 or 15 hours straight through the weekend.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it was really good though. I couldn't stop. Which, good sign. That says good things about the game. That's all right. Let's set it up. This is the second Adam Jensen game. Third one made by Eidos Montreal, because we have to include Deus Ex the Fall,
don't we?
Yeah, we do. Don't we?
The sad thing is, right, they clearly haven't...
Okay, hang on, sorry. What about Deus Ex Go? Do we count that as canon? That's probably made... Is that made by Eidos? I don't know. Probably not.
I don't think that counts as canon.
It's going to be a better game than The Fall, isn't it? Let's be honest. Going by Hitman Go and Lara Croft Go. It's quite likely to be better.
See, I was hoping they would just forget that Deus Ex The Fall existed, but they clearly haven't.
No, because Alex Vega... Yeah. Is in Mankind Divided, who, I didn't know she was in The Fall, because I haven't heard that until I read it, and Tim, you just forgot, so she made a big impression in The Fall, clearly.
Let me put it this way, there were other things about Deus Ex The Fall that left a significantly bigger scar on my psyche than a side character.
Stinkier impression. No, look, we have to sort this out, right? How many canon Deus Ex games are there? Are there four? Or are there five? Because whether you will like it or not, Tim, you have to include Invisible War.
I fucking don't.
Yeah, you do. You've got a Alex Denton.
It is a real person. It is not.
They happened. He or she happened.
It is not part of my head canon.
I'm sorry.
It's like the Matrix sequels. Because it exists doesn't mean I'm willing to accept it.
Was Dishonored enough of a Harvey Smith-based apology to make up for Deus Ex Invisible War?
Well, Dishonored was really good. I still refuse to accept that Invisible War is actually a thing.
Okay, fine.
Note that I call it Invisible War, not Deus Ex Invisible War.
I saw the heads-up display from Invisible War the other way. Oh. That was a terrible thing to behold.
Invisible War was in general.
It And that user interface. Oof.
I want to get this sorted out quickly, actually, because there are a lot of people who say, "Oh, Invisible War's fine. It's just because it came after Deus Ex. It, you know, it wasn't as good as Deus Ex."
You know what? I'm kind of one of those people. I don't think Invisible War's that bad. I'm sorry.
I'm fucking not. I've tried playing it again about 3 or 4 times, and it is just bad.
Well, you can't really play it now on PC because every time you change scenes, it like loads the game again in another window. By the time you finish playing it, you've got about 30 different windows open.
I can't remember when the last time I tried playing it was, but that was not a problem I had.
What about the virtual reality pop star that it predicted Hatsune Miku, unless she already existed before Invisible War? I don't know. But if she didn't, it predicted that. That's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah, great. And also coffee shops.
The coffee shop's quest was all right. That was a comment on global
capitalism. That was literally the only good quest in the game.
I mean, granted, I can't name much else. What about the Omar with the weird little masks?
No, they were rubbish.
They were okay. What about how in the final mission, you were back on Liberty Island and you had like 4 different things you could... I think the last mission of Invisible War was better than the last mission of Human Revolution.
I can barely remember the last mission of Invisible War, but you might be right.
I'm being very selective here, clearly. But
yeah, I'm talking purely in terms of the level itself, not the setup, the UI, the game mechanics, any of that shit.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was the fact that it was massively constrained in that weird period. When they were making things for the original Xbox, none of the levels could be bigger than like 4 corridors long, which is pretty unfortunate.
And yet, Thief: Deadly Shadows was still good.
Yeah, I mean that had the same sort of problem. It didn't seem quite as constrained, so maybe because the Thief levels are just denser in general.
Possibly.
You know, it's normally like a house or something, or a mansion, I suppose I should say, not like a bungalow. That'd be
Even Deadly Shadows, I mean, you had the city freeform wandering, which, don't get me wrong, that was reasonably constrained, because I think that was split into, what, 5 different loading zones?
Something like that, yeah.
I mean, that's for that point, that's still not too bad.
Yeah, anyway, we've managed to talk quite a lot not about Mankind Divided so far, so that's that's good. It's the second Adam Jensen game. That's safe to say. He's back from Human Revolution. It's 2 years on from the end of that game, where, spoilers for Human Revolution now, basically anyone with augmentations went a bit mental. Except for Adam Jensen, because he's like augmented Jesus, so that's fine.
No, that's JC Denton.
Yeah, but they're both kind of... I suppose he's Icarus, isn't he, old Jensen? They keep using a lot of like wing imagery with him.
I'd actually forgotten, right up until this moment, that one of the AIs from the original Deus Ex was called Icarus. Was it Icarus, Helios, and Daedalus, wasn't it?
It was Daedalus and Icarus to begin with.
Daedalus was the friendly one. Icarus was the one that kept trying to kill you, and Helios was the merged one.
Yes, he's both of them combined. Yeah.
It's been a while since I played that game. I need to play it again.
Yeah. Anyway, it's 2 years later. Jensen has quite a bit of missing time, it turns out. He was fished out of the waters of Panchaea and kind of, doesn't really remember what happened for about a year. He was in some clinic in Alaska. But now, at the start of this game, he is working for an Interpol task force called Task Force 29, who work for the UN, I guess. I wasn't explicitly clear on what this task force was. They go around, you know, stopping terrorism and stuff, like you do.
Pretty much. They appear to be kind of a global special forces body with their own group of analysts and so on and so forth.
And am I right in saying they're run by Joseph Mendeley?
Yes. Well, who, of course, mostly.
Yeah, well, he's sort of the head of the whatever umbrella... Yeah. Organization,
the Umbrella Corporation. We've gone Resident Evil.
God, I hope not. It's confusing enough, Tim. So yeah, Manderly, who is the UNATCO head in the very, very first Deus Ex, he's in this one too. Up to no good.
Since I guess this means you're my new boss, look at Manderly's body over there and consider that my resignation.
Yeah, quite.
Not an exact quote, but...
That's pretty good, though. That's pretty good. So, yeah, you start off the tutorial mission. You're in Dubai, and there's an informant who is setting up an arms deal with some... Are they Iraqi group called the Jinn?
Peter, why are we going over all of this? This is a spoiler cast that everyone's already fucking played it and finished
it.
There's a 12-minute intro video that explains the entire plot.
Well, that explains Human Revolution. It doesn't. All right, okay. So yeah, I was just going to get to the game proper, which I consider to be when you're in your apartment. After the Dubai mission, you're in your apartment.
No, it's okay. You can go over the Dubai mission for 5 minutes if you want to.
No, I'm done. Well, I wanted to ask whether at the end of it, you have to stop a helicopter from taking off and protect your informant. And this is kind of, for me, where it all went like, oh, by the way, this is a Deus Ex game, because you can fuck this up and the game will just carry on anyway. It doesn't care. I fucked up. I let the helicopter get away, but I protected Singh, the advisor, the informant guy, and I wondered what happened with you.
I have never managed to let the helicopter get away, and I didn't even think it was possible.
No, it was, believe me. I was very focused on protecting Singh, apparently.
See, I had Singh die about 19 times the first time, because I was trying to do everything all non-lethally, and that section is really fucking hard to do non-lethally with a tranq rifle.
Yes, I was also in the non-lethal boat. Turns out, quite an easy way to do it is if you just tranq Singh, because then he'll be unconscious and they'll ignore him.
Oh, I can't believe it.
That's why Deus Ex is a fucking great series.
I didn't even think of that.
How do you disable, this is maybe a stupid question. I assumed I would have to, blow the helicopter up in some way, but presumably there's a way you can just, do something with it.
You walk over to the helicopter and there's a hatch on the side of it that you can open. You basically just pull out, the engine or whatever.
Oh, right. Okay, right. I did reach the helicopter, but I reached it just as it was leaving, so...
MacReady or whoever goes, good thinking. Good thinking on the fly there, Tin Man.
MacReady is asshole. Peter Serafinowicz.
Yeah,
great.
It's great. I did have Singh die quite a lot. I've got to say, I actually found it a lot easier when I did it on Give Me Deus Ex difficulty when playing as a psychopath. Possibly because I was just murdering literally everybody in the room, and I actually killed everyone before the helicopter even took off.
Very good. Good job, Jensen.
That was good. Good job, Jensen, as opposed to good job, Jensen, you fucking bellend. Which,
also get as a summary of your mission performance, yes.
I want that as my ringtone. Not that I have a mobile phone, but...
But if you... Well, you might buy one, though, just to add that as a...
Yeah, I want the sound file of Peter Serafinowicz saying, oh, good fucking job, Jensen, you fucking bellend. There's a lot of swearing in this game.
He gives a good fuck you early on as well. Yes. When you're, taking the piss out of his intelligence, basically.
Yeah, that's the it's when you're talking to him about he's complaining that he's going to have to hack through all the systems or something like that, and Jensen says something, oh, you should like it, it's all colours and shapes. Just remember that red means bad.
So then then actually between waking up in your apartment, there is an important thing that happens.
Then you go to a Prague train station and a bomb goes off and fucks up all your augmentations and you go back to your apartment.
But you get a lot of exposition as well that's kind of hurried and a bit of a mess, I think. I don't think this game introduces some of its concepts that brilliantly, to the extent that one point Jensen literally says, ah, Janus, the leader of the hacktivists. You just kind of see the writer shrugging and going, that's the best thing to do, sorry. Yeah, you get a lot of stuff up front. So yeah, as well as working for Task Force 29, you're also working for some hacktivists, I guess. That just sort of happens. That's just introduced to you.
Yeah,
and then you get blown up.
You're working, Jensen is kind of a double agent with the Juggernaut Collective, which yeah. is quite possibly a meaningful initialization since that goes down to JC.
That's right, it does.
Although we don't know. We'll find that out in a sequel, I guess.
We'll find out a lot in the sequel, but yeah, we'll get to that.
The sequel will be Deus Ex The Rise on Apple. iPads.
No. Maybe Deus Ex Go has the rest of the game lore hidden in it somewhere.
Possibly. The exposition is a bit clunky. And yeah, Jensen is working as a double agent for the Juggernaut Collective within Task Force 29. And a big thrust of the plot is basically, can you trust TF-29? Who can you trust there? Who's on the level? Who's secretly working for the Illuminati, etc., etc.?
Which I thought was reasonably well done. There's a few choices where it's like, do you want to trust Miller? Do you want to trust Alex Vega?
Whereas I just...
At points where you're thinking, well, they might both be dodgy because it's Deus Ex.
I just didn't really like Alex Vega that much. And I quite liked Miller. So, and you know, he actually got screen time, so I generally stuck with him.
I thought his voice acting was a bit off.
It is, but not quite off. His accent is weird.
I don't know if it's his fault. He seemed kind of mixed more quietly than other people to me. So when he's emoting or, you know, saying something more forcefully, it kind of just felt a bit flat because he was quiet.
I've got to be honest.
Who knows? I don't have like an amazing speaker system or anything, but I didn't think, something was off about his voice to me.
It's possible. Distracting. As I say, I don't remember noticing it. That doesn't mean it's not there. It's just certainly not something that's stuck with me. I found his accent a little bit uncanny in places. It was a little bit The Wire, where it sounded a bit like someone doing an accent and it doesn't quite work for one or two syllables, and it sounds a bit off. I'm now going to find out that he is actually an Australian actor or something like that. But
isn't he? Was he doing Australian or was it New Zealand? I wasn't.
Yes.
I thought he had a New Zealand flag in his apartment, but maybe it was an Australian one. I'm an idiot.
I can't remember. I remember that he was, law-wise, he worked for the Australian SAS, I think it was.
Yeah. That's right.
Which is why I assumed Australian, but I honestly don't know.
Did you hope to see Pritchard in this game when you got a little welcome pack from him in the apartment? Because I hoped to, and sadly that never happens.
On the plus side, we do have MacReady to fulfill the role of kind of friendly antagonist.
But with him, I also wish we got to do more missions with him, because really, he only kind of bookends the game, because he's in the tutorial one and he's in the last mission. And you can go and talk to him and have some conversations. But
it is worth going and talking to most people every time you go back to Prague. Go to the TF-29 headquarters and insult MacReady.
Yes, but there's no Pritchard. David Sarif's here. He's got a completely different voice actor because the original voice actor has issues, apparently. But he is here by video phone.
Yes.
So that's all right.
The impression of David Sarif was actually quite good, I have to say.
It's not bad. He's not saying Adam quite enough for my liking. But I don't know, the original guy was basically just he's David Sarif for me. He was just perfect for that character.
Yeah.
This guy's all right, you know. It's not, you know, awful or anything, but
No, it's not a hugely noticeable change from what I know.
No. But anyway, once you've done all that business, you're basically let loose into Prague, which is the game's one and only hub, which I feel kind of works and kind of doesn't work for various reasons. I like how deeply they kind of double down on the density of things to find and the uniqueness of rooms and buildings and things like that. I don't really love how it makes this whole game feel a lot more localized, like kind of single location basically. Yeah, than the other Deus Ex.
Deus Ex as a series, excluding The Fall, which was also set in a single location. Deus Ex as a series has always been about kind of globe-trotting, world-spanning conspiracies. Going to exotic locales from, Liberty Island all the way to Hong Kong and so on and so forth. And Invisible War had Antarctica and, I think, Cairo and various other places. And Deus Ex The Fall had one tiny slice of horror.
Because it was made for a phone.
Yeah. This is largely set in and around Prague with the occasional helicopter ride off for a single mission elsewhere. That said, I do think that this did annoy me at first. It annoyed me less as the game went on, particularly once Prague switches over to nighttime and everything looks totally different. Like, they did a hell of a lot with the art direction in Prague.
Absolutely, and I'm not saying, oh, they could, I'm not an internet commentator going, oh, they could have knocked together a second hub dead easy, like, clearly, given the depth and, as you say, all the original art stuff that went into Prague, there's pretty much no way they could have done the same thing for a second hub without substantially more development and a bigger budget, probably.
And likely cutting down Prague a lot. I do wonder. You had a pseudo second hub in Gollum City, but that's only for one very short period, and that's more like a starting area which has a couple of side quests and then a mission. I do, like, part of me wonders if Gollum City was originally meant to be bigger, more expansive, and more of a second hub. On the one hand, I don't feel like the story would have supported it, but on the other hand, I also feel that it would have been interesting to go back to Gollum City after the events of the mission there.
I definitely agree with that. Because obviously things have gone to shit over there, as they do in Prague, but to a lesser extent. And I actually almost kind of expected to have a mission going back there at some point, for whatever reason that they would have come up with. Wouldn't have been too hard. And then that didn't happen. So I think, funnily enough, I think if I play it a second time, I'm going to be less disappointed with the single hub thing. Because a lot of it was, playing it for review, I didn't know that it was only going to be a single hub, but that kind of dawned on me as I was playing, kind of thing. It's kind of, all right, I guess we're really not going anywhere else since we're 20 hours in and all this other stuff's happened. So it was more disappointing from that point of view, but I've kind of, when I thought back to it, I appreciated more what they did with Prague.
Prague is handled very well. I don't know whether I'd say it's my favourite of the hubs from the Deus Ex games, but it's a really good hub. It's got a lot of stuff in there, a lot of wonderful little nooks and crannies and bits to discover, loads and loads of side quests and side characters and all sorts, and it does change over the course of the game. To a bigger extent than, was it Detroit in Human Revolution, which you go back to about halfway through the game?
There's sort of some protesters on the streets and stuff, but it's not radically different. It's more the sort of the kind of window dressing you get in, like, open world RPGs sometimes, where if you've done a quest for someone in a village and then you come back and it's like, oh, look, we're all happy now because you've defeated the bandits or whatever. It definitely changes more substantially than that. Partly, of course, because the police start getting all up in your business even more than they do to begin with.
Well, there is that, yes. I genuinely thought that the transition to Prague at night time made a big difference to the feel of the area as much as anything else.
Oh yeah.
Because up until then, the red light district in particular was basically completely unnoticeable. Or so I found.
It's actually, isn't it like completely closed to begin with? I think
possibly.
I went over there and it just had barriers up, I think. And I
thought, you might be right.
It's the red light district, so I guess it's not open during the day. So it's really good areas. Like, I love the bank. I think the bank's great.
The bank? I actually think the bank is arguably the best single location in the game. In terms of mission design, flow, and so on and so forth. That's the first time through. The second time through, not quite so much. But the first time through, when I went and did a little side quest in there, I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you get... I didn't do it the second time, because that's a point where you're actually... If you've played, you will know. You are given a choice. You basically get called by Alex, and she says, oh, they're shredding documents at the bank. You've got to come back. But at the same time, Jensen's just heard that he should be heading to the Church of the Machine Gods to apprehend someone who was involved in the bombing. And it's basically, what do you want to do? Can't do both.
Yeah.
Got to make a choice.
That is one of the only times. The Machine God. That's one of the only times, I think, in the game that actually happens. Which isn't a particularly big surprise, nor is it particularly uncommon. I mean, even for this series, it's rare for something like that to happen.
I was a bit worried that it was going to pull another Human Revolution hostage situation, because at the start of Human Revolution, if you take too long with the hostage thing, then they've just been killed already before you go on the mission. Because I was dicking around in Prague for ages before going to the TF-29 HQ, and Miller kept calling me going, Jensen, have you got lost? should I start asking around for police reports?
let's face it, you've got a pretty good excuse in that case. You've just been in a bombing, your augmentations are conveniently fried, and the police are out in force, making it a complete dick to actually get across the city.
Yeah, I thought that was as video game excuses to wipe all your skills go. I thought they handled that pretty well, actually, with the orc thing.
I thought they handled it well for two reasons.
Go on.
First, it's not a bad reason that you need to go and see Prince, and he fucks everything up. And secondly, because they actually give you a shitload of praxis kits, so it's not like you're suddenly back to being human. It's like, okay, you've lost all the augments that you had, but you can go and upgrade like a dozen things if you want to.
Yeah. Although mostly I dumped those back into hacking and stuff like that. I also put one into the marking and tagging eye thing, purely because I had some weird bug where in the corner of the screen it had like hold T to unmark the tagged people, and I thought, well, fuck, that's not going to go away unless I get the tagging back again.
I had that permanently as well, and I just learned to ignore it.
Oh, right. Did that stay like the whole... Was that with you like the whole game?
Pretty much, yeah. I think it's because the game basically expects you to actually have that.
Once I got the eye thing and actually tagged some people and then untagged them, it went away.
Right.
So I was quite pleased about that.
I will say, even like on a non-lethal stealth ghost attempting playthrough, that is quite useful just for
watching
people. But then again, you've got a radar.
Not as useful as the cloak, though.
Oh, God. The cloak just breaks the game.
The almighty cloak. Yeah, I almost think it's a shame, because I like the Icarus dash thing as kind of a Dishonored style traversal stealth thing, but like, I'm just never going to use that because I've got a cloak. I can turn invisible. I don't need to do this dash thing. I mean, still, you can use that to actually dash into people, which is of course amusing, but it's half of its function is just kind of... What did you think about the new orgs, actually? I think remote hacking is in my all-time top five.
I barely use them. Remote hacking is very, very good, both because it opens up new environmental traversal options, which is Deus Ex to me, and because it allows for yet more stealthy bits and pieces, like you can use it to turn on a TV from a distance. I don't really like the fact that you have to do a really shit quick time event to succeed, but that's better than going into the full-on hacking interface every time. I don't mind the hacking minigame. It's just that for remote hacking, it would get a bit much. I like remote hacking. I fucking love the Tesla org. It is hilarious.
Yeah, what I didn't realise with that was how many people you can take down with it. It's like four, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, once it's fully upgraded, you can lock onto four people and just instantly incapacitate them.
That's completely absurd.
Yeah. Well, there was one bit, like right at the very end of the game, I think one of the last doors you need to come across, it's got like three guards in front of it and there's another one patrolling. And that was what I did. I turned on Cloak, walked up in front of them, marked all four of them with the Tesla org, and just electrocuted all four of them unconscious.
Nice. That's great. I think the reason I kind of didn't go with them is because, right, to start with, it does the whole, if you use these experimental ones, then your system will overheat and you'll have to turn off other stuff. But very heavily implied, as in fact the case, that you'll get an item that can sort this out at a later date.
Yeah.
So I pretty much resolved to just ignore them until I had that item.
That was what I did. Do you know, actually, if it says, because it says, to sort of reduce the heating on your system and so on, you have to permanently disable one of the orgs. Is it actually permanently disabling them, do you know?
I don't know. I don't think it is. I think it's just you have to juggle what you're using at any given time. I don't think it's a sort of, that's it, you can't use your hacking anymore.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I think it's just the overclock ones that you can opt to disable. I don't know for sure because I barely fucked around with this until I got said item. And got that sorted, and that was the point where I started really playing with the overclock orgs.
There's a very interesting achievement, actually, which says bring Prince the item before he asks for it.
Yes.
So which is pretty cool. So you can just bypass that whole thing entirely if you play it a second time.
I assume that's... I'm curious as to how that works, whether that does mean that you can actually get the overclock sorted out sort of before you leave Prague properly for the first time, or if it's just essentially if you break into the underground gambling casino and steal the thing before you've gone and met Prince and he's told you to do this.
Yes.
We are just calling him Prince, aren't we?
He's Prince. He's like mid-80s era Prince, just with a sort of slightly Czech accent. It's a very nice tribute to Prince, I thought.
Yeah.
Good on you, Eidos.
Don't know whether it was intentional, but I like it.
At some level, it must have been intentional. You can't tell me that nobody at Eidos Montreal wasn't looking at that character design going, you've drawn Prince. Surely that's intentional.
I've got to say, when I like first think sort of slightly mad scientist who likes to tinker with cybernetics, Prince is not my first idea for character design, but I'm glad they went there.
Yeah, it works for me.
Yeah.
What did you think about all of the kind of political discourse, org segregation business? How do you feel?
I feel like this worked and didn't work. I think I said this to you prior to the last podcast we did when this was still spoiler territory, but it kind of...
Yeah.
I feel like it works on the kind of local level, the low level, in the sense that you are, if you take the wrong train car, if you don't use the augmented lines and so on and so forth, you get hassled by the cops and you have to hand over your papers to prove that you're a goddamn super soldier who's allowed to do whatever the fuck he wants.
Who could kill them with a glance.
Speaking of which, Interpol gets no fucking respect around there.
No, it really doesn't.
There are so many missions and events where it's like, fuck off, Interpol. You've got no jurisdiction here. Well, actually you have, but we're still not letting you in.
Yeah.
I also thought that it worked on the grander scale as well, kind of setting the general scene for the game as being a world where there is quite a lot of unrest about augmented people and so on and so forth. It just kind of, it just didn't feel like it had any real impact on the middle.
Between the low and high tissue between those two things.
It didn't really have any impact on sort of the game. It didn't really have that much of an impact on the plot. The story, yes, the plot, not so much. The other way around. It worked and it didn't. It felt a bit more like it was a setting that then not a great deal was done with. Except on kind of a global scale where you're constantly getting news reports about how orgs are terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of with you, and then I kind of liked how it affected you as the main character.
It was odd to be discriminated against as a robot super soldier.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. I guess a little bit like The Witcher 3, where people hate you because you're a Witcher sometimes. Yeah. But that was kind of interesting.
Except in The Witcher 3, that problem is usually solved by just straight up fucking murdering them. Whereas in this case, you know, it's
the police.
It could be
solved by murdering people, but...
More often it's solved by having a little 20-second cutscene where you hand over some papers.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I struggled to see the direct through line from... I get it, okay, yeah, the orgs went nuts. People are now fearful of them. Legislation has been passed. I don't necessarily see the through line from that to, like, org-only benches and stuff, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That seemed a little too on the nose for, like, oh, what do we know about racial segregation? Oh, yeah, different benches and water fountains and stuff.
I think
let's do that.
I think some of that is forgivable, partly because it is repeatedly mentioned, and you might class this as a hand wave, but it's repeatedly mentioned that Prague is kind of the centre of anti-org resentment. It is the single place on the planet that hates orgs the most.
Which they explain because it was a very tech-based hub, so a lot of augmented people came there.
Yeah.
I think is their explanation for that. Well, yeah, that's fine.
I kind of got the sense, okay, it's not like this in the rest of the world. It's just that we are actually, the game takes place in the most racist place on the planet for the purposes of this.
I guess that also explains the change from, because in Human Revolution, the whole thing was like, right, the thing with transhumanism is it's only going to be for the wealthy.
Yeah.
The poor are all going to be left behind. Whereas in this, it's kind of flipped, because now the augmented people are the lower class, if you like, the people who have been pushed into the worst districts and pushed out of the city itself and stuff. And I suppose if you go with the, like, well, a bunch of rich tech people moved to Prague, you can just about explain how that socioeconomic flip happens.
That said, I will admit that living in a democratic country, I do think it would take a lot longer than 2 years to get, like, separate lines set up in the metro. I mean, for fuck's sake, they've only just managed to get the night tube working in London.
I mean, I think where I feel like what I feel did work was the Golem City Augmented Rights Coalition. I kind of liked the portrayal of this kind of community leader who hasn't been elected really, but he's in power because he's charismatic and he's controlling the local militia who are handing out supplies and stuff. I mean, there are real world allegories to be drawn from that, and I thought that was relatively nuanced and well done.
Yeah.
Not entirely nuanced, like some of the propaganda posters are pretty, again, on the nose.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm prepared to put up with some of that in a game when it's doing sci-fi metaphors, to be honest.
It is a huge metaphor, essentially. It's one giant video game based analogy. I think it's quite heavy-handed about some of it, but it still, I feel, handles a lot of that stuff better than, for instance, BioShock Infinite.
Yes, which handles it all right for a while, and then at the end goes, oh yeah, but if you actually try to fight back against this oppression, then you're just as bad, because we've made you look just as bad with our writing. All right, okay, BioShock. Fair enough. I think I like the stuff in Mankind Divided where it's being allegory or metaphor for kind of general state repression. I think when it drills down and tries to do straight racism stuff, it doesn't work as well because the sort of fears that drive racism, I don't think, are the same as the sort of fears that would drive anti-augmentation sentiment in this universe. I mean, that's getting a bit wanky, maybe. But...
No, I think it's a valid point, though.
And that's maybe why some of the portions don't necessarily work. It took a decent stab at it.
It's occasionally heavy-handed, but I do think that by and large, it handles it okay. Better than most AAA titles could manage, I think.
That's reasonable.
Although,
I like it when games try this. You know, even if they don't get it 100% right, I like that they're giving this a go. Basically,
it is very difficult, obviously, for me to comment directly on how well this functions as a white male. But you know,
yeah, of course.
Yeah, except for when I'm moonlighting as Idris Elba, obviously. But that's
Let's not go into that. I hope Idris Elba plays and enjoys Deus Ex Mankind Divided.
I hope a lot of people play and enjoy Deus Ex Mankind Divided because I do think that it is a really good game. I think that it's got a lot of issues in terms of plot and structure and story and even pacing at places, but in terms of actual core Deus Ex gameplay, I think that it is really fucking good. It reminds me a lot, oddly enough, something that I reinstalled the other day, and I haven't had a chance to play, I think I'm defragging it right now, was Metal Gear Solid 5, which reminds me quite a lot of Deus Ex in a similar way, in that Metal Gear Solid 5 is, I think, one of the best stealth action games in recent years. However, its story and plot are complete and utter shit. This does nothing to detract from the fact that as a game, it is really good. Deus Ex doesn't fall nearly so far on the plot and story scale, but it is a similar thing in that the plot and story don't quite work as much as you'd like, but the core gameplay is good enough that it's kind of hard to care.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Mankind Divided, I liked, you know, almost all of the sort of world building stuff and a great deal of the minute to minute sort of text in hacked emails and individual side quest dialogue and stuff. It's the kind of overarching narrative that is a bit messy. Not that great.
That's the thing. It's like a lot of the side quests and the characters involved in the side quests are so much better than the actual major players in the story.
The
villain of the piece is fucking terrible.
He's just nothing. He's just a big load of nothing.
Yeah,
you know, you meet him in Golem City, and he's like, we will find ourselves on different sides, you and I, sometime soon. Mr. Jensen Bond. And then, lo and behold, there he is in the final mission, and you're fighting him, and then you beat him, and it's the end.
Lo and behold, the true villain turns out to be the only slightly villainous character who hasn't already been accounted for. What a surprise!
The only aspect of that I quite like is that, so right at the start, you're being pushed to frame, effectively. Well, No, not necessarily frame. You're being encouraged to find evidence that the Augmented Rights Coalition are the ones behind the bombing.
Yes.
In a very guided way. Like, yes, it's definitely them who did it, Jensen. Go and find the evidence.
Yeah.
Through various side quests and things, you find that a lot of this stuff was set up. They were framed for a plane hijacking and bombing and stuff like that. And I thought, all right, okay, yeah, it's going to do the usual thing where they're actually completely innocent and everything's fine. But actually, the guy who is within ARK, he's kind of got a splinter faction going on, but he is responsible. So in a way, it is kind of their fault.
It's just not
as directly as you might think.
I did like that, actually. That also ties into Deus Ex's continual themes of conspiracies quite well, too. Because that is a conspiracy within the organization that is being framed by a conspiracy.
Yes.
They're
framing them and also pulling the strings.
Yes.
at the sides to, yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of
kinda cool.
Pulling the strings and pulling the strings within the organization itself. Which, yeah, that was an element that I quite liked.
Yeah, I think that... It's kind of a shame that Marchenko himself is just boring.
Yeah, he is not a good... I can't even call him a character, because he's not. He's a caricature as much as anything.
I got a bit of backstory on him. I don't know if you did. You get some from side quests or asking the in-house psychiatrists to look into him.
Yeah.
But then she's also a spy, so she might just be bullshitting.
Also possible.
She tells you, like, he had a different name and he had a wife and kid and then they disappeared at some point. And it's like, all right.
Yeah, but
I wonder where this is going to go. Nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even the fact that it's not even the fact that it goes nowhere. It's the fact that he has no plot or character development at all. You don't learn anything about him over the critical path of the game. Literally, the only way to find out more information about him is to do side quests and then read stuff in your email half the game later.
Like, why is he doing what he's doing? All I've got is because the Illuminati are telling him to.
Yeah.
Really, that's I don't even know if that's accurate, really.
Yeah, he is not a good character. And as I said, very few of the characters along the critical path are particularly good. I like the Task Force 29 people, but then again, you see them every time you go back to Prague. So
yeah, they get plenty of lines as long as you go and talk to them. But then that's on you if you don't do that. So
yeah. I like quite a lot of the side quest characters. I like the Czech, the Ukrainian, Georgian, Russian mafia. I quite like their characters as well. Prince is obviously great, turning in one of his best performances.
Well, I don't know, Tim. Under a Cherry Moon is pretty good.
True. But, Czech Prince is pretty good. The forger you meet is decent.
Yep, she's good.
I did think that the underground newspaper writers, they started to get on my nerves a lot towards the end of the game. I think that was possibly intentional.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I kind of like their overly earnest kind of WikiLeaks style.
Yeah.
whatever they're going for there. But...
The murder mystery side quest, the characters involved in that are good.
Yeah, that's a really good side quest.
It's a really good side quest that I feel could probably have been fleshed out a bit more with more suspects and investigation and stuff, but whatever.
Sure.
But yeah, it's just the critical path is just like Marchenko and chasing after these gold-masked terrorists who you've never seen since Dubai, and then they only turn up again basically like a quarter from the end of the game.
Yeah, so right, okay. I'm going to try and figure out what he actually wants.
Yeah, good fucking luck.
At the beginning of the game, it's suggested and fairly clear that your task force were not the nearest one. They were chosen specially to be in Dubai so that they could witness this thing happening.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I still can't. I can't remember why that is or if it's ever explained.
That's so you see a bunch of augmented people and then go, oh, it's the augmented rights people up to no good.
Yeah, but why is it your task force? Why couldn't the task force in Oman, that's apparently closer, do this?
I don't know. I don't know why it's yours that has to see this. But other than you are Adam Jensen and you're the star of this video game.
Well, that's the only thing I can think of, right? Is that Adam Jensen is the only augmented agent, active field agent in... I actually can't remember whether it's in Interpol or whether it's just in Task Force 29. But if you assume it's in Interpol, then, you know, you could theorize that it'd be something like, okay... Here's the augmented guy who's probably not going to believe it's augmented people. Let's have him see this. Then again, it's also implied that the gold mass terrorists aren't, you know, you wouldn't be sent directly into an ambush intentionally.
Anyway,
yeah.
So that's a bit confusing. But the Illuminati orchestrated it for whatever reason.
The Illuminati did it, and we don't know why.
We don't know, because they're the Illuminati. Maybe we'll find out in the next game.
They run... Well, that's the thing. They're sort of running the gold mass terrorists, and they're running Task Force 29.
And they're presumably manipulating the UN vote for the, like, humanity first... resolution or whatever that's called, to get a chip put in all the augmented people.
Well, that's a key part of the game that is not brought up nearly as much as it should have been.
Yes, correct. It's there and it's in some of the texts and stuff, but it's kind of it's not really front and center until it really is front and center and incredibly important all of a sudden. So Marchenko is... He's part of the Talos Rucker's ARC group.
Yeah.
But he's not... I get the impression he's not satisfied with how Rucker's dealing with things, and that's why he's splintering off. He wants to be a lot more aggressive.
Yeah, Rucker...
Presumably the Illuminati have exploited that to use the magical orchid poison to bump off Rucker. But then it's... Not like Marchenko. Well, I guess Marchenko is then in charge of ARC, but then he kills off the remains of ARC pretty quickly in that Swiss mission.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know.
And then he's going to poison the people who are lobbying against the humanity, putting chips in augmented people act. Why is he doing that? Why does he want to stop that? I don't understand.
Because the Illuminati.
Yeah. Or rather, why does he want that to go through, which it's more likely to if he carries out his mission?
Because the Illuminati... Right, I got the sense. moving aside from the default a wizard did it hand wave. I kind of get... I kind of get the sense that he... kind of feels that, and we're dipping into allegories again here, he kind of feels that a race war is inevitable and he's trying to kickstart it.
Right. And that's also been exploited by, again, the Illuminati.
Yes.
They're good at that center sort of thing.
He's trying to foster the fear and hatred and so on and so forth.
What's going to accelerate?
That's the thing. Right.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense.
I got the sense that he feels that regardless of what happens, whether it passes or not, the augmented people are still going to be second-class citizens who are downtrodden, underfoot, and resented, regardless of whether this passes or not.
Probably accurate.
The only way to deal with this is, you know, uprising.
Terrorism-tastic.
Yes. That's about the only motivation I really got for it, and then the assumption that the Illuminati is manipulating all of this.
I'm fairly happy to go along with that.
Yeah, but that's the problem. I'm fairly happy to go along with that, but that's essentially, I've just imagined that. That's not really...
Nobody ever really says that. That's just... we're kind of inferring that.
Yeah, I can't really remember that being directly said at any point in the game. Now, it's fair to say
that it has to be...
No.
So super directly said.
But... No, it is fair to say that we both blitzed through. It is quite possible that we forgot or are misremembering things, or we simply missed little bits of context that explain this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's kind of our discussion on why.
Yeah, the
central plot being a bit wonky.
Yeah, the critical path.
Or just not quite.
It's not bad. It's not Metal Gear Solid 5 bad.
I don't know what that is, but sure.
It is very stupid.
What do you think's going on with Jensen and his new orgs? Because
that's never explained either.
No, that's going to happen in like the next game.
I actually wonder whether that might be explained in one of the side missions, the DLC ones that are coming out.
Maybe
sort of like how Human Revolution had the mission on the boat,
yes.
Which fleshed.
You mean we'll get like Jensen in the lab in Alaska?
Either something like that, yeah, or it might be.
Yeah.
A side investigation that he goes on at some point, potentially after the close of the game or towards the end of the game, or I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them explore that a little bit more.
If it's a properly meaty add-on, then I could see it being a here's what happened during Jensen's missing year type of thing. Well, not the whole year, but you know.
You kind of discover, like, the impression I got is that you were kind of used as Jensen was used as kind of a test, because he's one of these magical one in a billion people who doesn't reject augments, so he doesn't need to take neuroxazine.
Right. Which is exactly.
The big problem that augmented people have is that their bodies reject having these metal things grafted onto them, and they have to take anti-rejection drugs.
I suppose that's the other big explanation for why they are now the lower class of civilian, because the neuroxazine seems to have dried up.
Yes,
quite considerably.
There's only one company manufacturing it, I think.
And it's kind of difficult to keep your job and keep it together when you need this thing to function in day-to-day life, I'm sure.
I got the sense that because of his the fact that he doesn't need to take that, he was kind of used in the lab as a test subject for all these experimental orgs. And that's presumably how he got his hands on them, and he was never meant to find them again, right up until the point where Prince fucks him up.
What if he actually died at the end of Human Revolution?
Then this game was a just big Jensen. Waste of time.
And he's now Jensen 2.0.
Oh, okay.
And that's why all his stuff has new serial codes on it.
It's possible.
Because, you know, the Illuminati.
Yeah. It seems a bit weird. I don't think we can actually discuss this much further without going into possibilities for the next game. Because I can see a lot of ways that they could go through this and expand it towards Deus Ex, the original.
Yeah. And to be clear, it totally ends on a we're going to do another game type. Not quite cliffhanger, it's just sort of...
It basically spells out what Jensen is going to do next. And
the pacing of the narrative is such that it just, you know, it kind of starts ramping up with the final mission of the game. And then it's over, and you're like, oh, I guess we're not going to find out any of that other stuff for a while.
Yeah, it sort of feels like if Deus Ex had finished in Hong Kong or something like that. It's like, you've blown up the thingy, and you know, you've met up with Tracer Tong, and you've sorted out the stuff there. You've turned off your kill switch, and then it ends and goes and has a cutscene where a brooding JC Denton goes, oh, now I've got to go and finds out what's going on with Unatco and sort that out.
Yeah. And, you know, I've seen some people kind of suggesting, oh, it's typical bullshit, they're going to sell us the ending as DLC, and I just don't see it. I don't think you can wrap up what it leaves hanging in DLC. I don't think it's that at all. I think this is definitely like going into we want to do, and we'll hopefully do, a third game territory.
Yeah, and there is a lot of territory. Because you need to do sort of the rise of Majestic 12, the fall of the Illuminati, the start of the nano augmentation stuff that JC and Paul had. You have to resolve exactly what happened to Adam Jensen before the start of Deus Ex. I wouldn't be surprised if after all of this he does kind of wind up siding with the Illuminati after the whole MJ-12 coup, although I can't remember when that may have already not happened, but MJ-12 I think is already a sizable faction at this point within the Illuminati.
Right. In the timeline of Deus Ex Land.
I can't remember that much of the specific timeline, but I know that a bunch of stuff that's alluded to in Deus Ex has already happened. That's right. I think it's in like two more years or something like that is when an earthquake devastates the west coast of America. And the Illuminati basically goes, yeah, fuck this. It'll be easier.
This has really messed with our plans.
Yeah, they basically go, it'll be easier not to deal with all of this shit. And Bob Page and Majestic 12 go, well, actually, we want to deal with this shit. And then they basically gut the Illuminati and take over the whole global conspiracy string-pulling puppet mastery stuff. And that's a pretty good setting for a game, and I'd like to see Adam Jensen get involved in all of that. There is a lot of territory still to explore about events that have been alluded to in other games. And this can easily tie into his finding out who Janus is, the overarching shit with the Illuminati, manipulating everybody because they're the Illuminati.
They can't help themselves.
Yeah. So can we talk about stuff that we actually like about the game? Because we have kind of ranted about how the plot doesn't quite work for a while.
I don't know. We've mentioned some things we like, I think.
We have.
Things we like are basically all of the mechanics.
Yes.
Like how great it is to still have a few people doing big budget, single player, RPG action-ish games of this type. You know, you got Arcane doing the Dishonored series, and it looks like Prey is going to be another similar type of thing. And you got Eidos Montreal doing Deus Ex, and maybe, hopefully, a better Thief game at some point in the future. Maybe.
Yeah, the mechanics... But if not,
more Deus Ex is fine.
The mechanics are great. The level design is generally really, really good. There are a couple of areas which are a bit shonky, but not that many. By and large, you've got all of the options you could possibly hope for. Even going back as far as Dubai, when, you know, you've got a smattering of augments, there are lots of different paths you can take through that. I only discovered on my second playthrough just how far the rafters extend and how far you can get through that area by just sticking to them. There are loads and loads of really good bits and pieces like that. As I mentioned before, I really love the bank level. I love that it's this huge, big level with lots of restricted areas, but also lots of public areas.
And if you feel like it and you feel skillful enough, you can, you know, get into the vaults and help yourself to some quite nice stuff. Or you can just stick to whatever side mission you're on and do that.
Not only that, if you open up the vaults properly, then like there are cameras in there. They'll still spot you hacking and stuff if you're trying to break open the safes. But you can go into the vaults without them being a restricted area. I think if you have the key cards to open the door. I can't remember if there is another way to get in there and they're restricted and the alarms will go off if the cameras in there spot you, because I didn't do that. But it's a really cleverly designed area. It wouldn't surprise me necessarily if the bank was actually kind of like the proof of concept for the rest of the game.
Could be.
Just because it's got sort of multi-levels, floors, little puzzles, lots of terminals to hack that give you hints, loads of bonus equipment and side questy bits and pieces. It's such a good level. That side quest in particular is great. It is not quite as good, as I said, when you have to go back there the second time, partially because I'd already done it once and partially because security has ramped up a hell of a lot and it's not... It's not quite as much fun as like trying to do a midday pseudo bank heist.
Right, when they're not really expecting anyone. It's you against the everyday security forces kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I just love any game where like I can be basically, I dicked around in the first, not even the whole bit of Prague, just the first area of Prague for like several hours, I think, before going to the headquarters for the task force. Like immediately after coming out of Jensen's apartment and finding other apartment buildings, it's like, right, I'm going to try and get into these.
Yeah.
Can I hack them? Yeah, I can hack some of the doors, so I can do that. The ones I can't, I can just like jump to the window ledge.
Yeah.
You know, there's vents I can explore to try and get into them. And when you do go into them, they're all like each apartment has a little story to it. Yeah. You know, it has a purpose. There's something relevant in every one. Like even if it's just a couple of computers to hack that has a bit more world building stuff in it. Or it might have something that's pertinent to a side quest or something, but they're all, yeah, they all have their own sort of sense of style and that. It's not just, here's another default video game apartment because we built some apartment buildings and felt the need to flesh them out. all of that is great.
Yeah.
I love it.
There is obviously the more important apartments that you can break into, bits and pieces like Miller's apartment, your boss, obviously have a bit more to them than most of the rest. I did quite like the change from Human Revolution, actually, where Human Revolution, Jensen's apartment is this amazing luxury penthouse. And in Mankind Divided, it's basically a kind of shitty, dark, rubbishy apartment.
Yeah.
Although he still has secret panels in the walls. Basically.
Yeah, it's still quite high tech, but he's making the best of it.
Yeah, you get the sense that's probably more TF-29 than anything else. He got Chang to install those panels and the home security system and all the rest of it.
Yeah. The mirrors still don't work in this world, though.
No.
Which I find a bit amusing.
Yeah, it's not like Jensen doesn't have a proper 3D model or anything, because it goes into third person view every time you go into cover, and you've got different outfits, supposedly.
I did notice that a few points pre-release, I don't think this is the case anymore post-release, but pre-release, when I had the FOV at the fullest extent, when I tried to look down at my legs, I was just a floating pistol. So I don't know if that's related to the mirror
possibly
stuff or what, but that was kind of bizarre. Yeah, it's weird, because as far as I know, the Dawn engine is a version of whatever they're using for the new Hitman game, and the new Hitman game does mirrors just fine.
Yeah.
So and maybe it's just a running joke about, because Human Revolution had that whole side thing about Jensen wanting a new mirror for his apartment, which I'm pretty sure was his cover for the fact that they couldn't do mirrors properly.
Yeah,
but I don't know. Otherwise, though, some very nice bits of art and design.
So where?
Yeah, I really like the sort of stuff like the underground theater that's below the art gallery and stuff like that.
Yeah, there
are. It's not massively relevant to anything. It's involved in a side quest, but it's just part of a character development thing. And yet has had a lot of effort put into it. I really like games I've discovered where, basically there's a lot of stuff in there that some people will just like never see.
Yeah.
But which I know are generally considered a risk, because that means you're putting things in the game that players might not see. Oh no.
Oh my God. It's just attention to detail as much as anything. And that's what I always find, is that the difference between a good game and a great game usually comes down to the little bits of detail. And this is something that games like this tend to do very, very well.
I thought it was... Go on.
No, carry on.
Me something.
I'm going to...
It might be what I was going to ask you. I was going to say that it's pretty good at being reactive to things that you've done and choices you've made. Like, not incredible, but pretty good, I thought.
Mostly. I need to finish a second playthrough to really check up on that.
Do you reckon some of it might be a bit illusory?
A little bit, yes. I don't know what happens with Sing if you murder everyone and don't shut down the transmitter, for instance, but still rescue him.
Right. Yeah.
The bits and pieces, I mean, it is definitely reactive. Like, we can talk, I think, two specific quests that showcase that quite well. One is that I did the bank and you did the Church of the Machine God. And I also did the... I reloaded and did the Church of the Machine God, but on my continued playthrough, I had done the bank.
Right.
And it's interesting the different reactions you get from Miller based on which one you do. Because...
What does he do if you do the bank?
He throws a massive fucking shit fit because you're not following up on the bombing case, which he has explicitly ordered you to do several times.
Fair enough.
Whereas, presumably, if you go and actually arrest the bomber, then he's much more happy with you.
Yeah, I mean, there's even sort of branches within that, because the bomber apprehension one ends with one of those conversation battle things. So I'm pretty sure it can end with you having to fight her or possibly even kill her if you balls up the conversation. Whereas I managed to do okay there, and some convenient men in black wearing shades showed up to arrest her and take her away. So yeah, and I guess you maybe don't get her handy Marchenko bomb stopping device if you don't win that conversation. I don't know.
Whereas on the other hand, if you go and do the bank, you get the antidote to the orchid. Only a sample of the antidote, only enough to use on like one or two people, which ties into the end to some extent as well, because you've got options there. I do kind of wonder whether the end does much like the start of Human Revolution did, where if you take too long, then Marchenko does just set off the bombs.
I assume so. I should have tested that probably. I made it in time.
The other bit we can talk about in terms of the game being reactive, sorry if you want to carry on.
I was just going to say, it feels like the last mission can play out in quite a few ways, but
yeah.
I guess the central thrust of it is always going to be the same, but the kind of peripheries will change.
I have to say, I loved the parts of the final mission where you're basically, it transitions into Hitman, and you have to take out 12 guards in the party without being spotted.
Really cool.
You don't have to, you're just asked to. You can take them down in full view of everyone and cause a panic, and Marchenko phones you up far sooner than he would normally. You can leave most of the guards there once you find the keycard that you're looking for, etc., etc. I thought that was a really great little set piece in a really good final mission.
I wonder what happens if you leave the guards there. If you find the key card and just leave the guards there, I wonder difference that might make to anything. Yeah, this is what I mean with the last mission play having, you know, scope for playing out pretty differently. But I'm not completely sure to what extent it really does. But
I don't think there are too many levels that have that degree of scope. Most of them tend to be more in terms of environmental differences as to how you go about doing the mission, rather than actual different sort of plot splitting trees. The other bit I was going to mention was one side quest I did, which you didn't, which was started by a glitchy map advert board. Where you, I think, just thought that it was a glitch because of all the Samizdat's quest stuff.
Yeah, I thought it was a follow-up from that, honestly. I didn't pay it too much attention, but I should have.
Whereas I walked up to it and I could use it, and a voice basically says, "I found you, now find me, Adam, quickly." And you get embroiled in this little subplot where you're tasked with finding an item before the Illuminati essentially do. And you deal with some hired assassins and so on and so forth. And it turns out... I feel bad about this because you haven't done this, so I don't know if I should spoil this on.
Yeah.
But it turns out that it's basically the AI for the original Eliza Kazan that you dealt with in the previous game in Montreal. And yeah, you're kind of trying to put her back together while the Illuminati is trying to get a hold of this missing piece of her so that they can destroy it and make sure that nobody puts her back together. The only real difference that this makes is that later on when Prague is under lockdown, she goes, "Oh, I want to help you, Adam," and blows up a car, which sends the police in the area looking in that direction, theoretically, so you can sneak past more easily. But as I was just walking around fully cloaked, having the police on alert was actually not that helpful. So thanks, Eliza.
She tried, Tim. She was just trying to do you a favour.
It's just occurred to me, right? She's called Eliza Kazan. I just had to Google this to check, but I've only just realised that one of the very first chatbots that was created was called Eliza.
Oh, right. Huh. That could be a little nod.
Yeah.
They go pretty heavy with their references sometimes. Yeah. I could see that being a thing.
I only just realised that now when I was saying it. But yeah, Eliza was one of the very first chatbots. Either one of the first or one of the first popularised ones. I mean, it certainly wouldn't pass the Turing test or anything like that, but it would respond to things you said. Yeah, I have to wonder whether, considering that one of the big twists of Human Revolution was that Eliza was an AI, whether that's... I think that's a bit of intentional naming.
The other side quest I know I missed was one to shut down a neon operation. So neon is like the replacement shitty drug for neuroprazine. There's apparently a side quest where you can like go and shut down the distribution of it, which I believe involves the rave that I never managed to get into, but desperately want to.
Neither of us managed to get into.
Yeah. I want to go to the underground Prague rave.
Yeah, I found the trash department of one of the guys who was selling neon without the permission of the local mafia.
I think you have to like come back there during one of Prague's transitions.
Right.
And the card for the rave is in. I think it's basically what I've read, but yeah.
Yeah, missed that one. Quite sad about that because I wanted to go to this rave.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I kept hearing it, at least what I think was it, when walking around Prague. So, unless that was just music from the shops, I'm not sure.
I'm also curious about how that area would look in the lockdown section, assuming you can still get in there then.
Yeah, good point. Are people still just in there?
Yeah. Well, I mean...
The police moved in to shut everything down.
Well, that's the thing, it's the red light district. There's a lot of people there that... Half of them fled there, and half of them were just there to begin with, and now they can't piss off. It'd be interesting seeing if there were any interesting little environmental changes to the rave, if you can still get in there.
Yeah. Good question.
I played through basically doing pacifist and trying to ghost things and usually failing and just knocking people out. I've had more fun on my second playthrough so far using all of my ridiculous orgs and straight up murdering people.
Yeah.
Although the problem with that is you can't tap people on the shoulder and punch them in the face. The upside...
Which is endlessly entertaining.
The upside is that you can use your nanoblades and shoot people.
And actually use some of the guns. Yeah, I had an inventory full of guns that I basically never used, except maybe the EMP pistol thing occasionally for cameras and exosuit dudes. That's about it.
I did the because the Jensen Adventure or whatever the fuck the side stories are called, Jensen Stories.
Adam Jensen, cat burglar extraordinaire.
Yeah, I did that one because that starts you off with basic orgs and a load of praxis, and so I was like, okay, I'm going to do this full murder. I'm going to kill everyone in this place. On give me Deus Ex difficulty. And it proved to be quite difficult, but also quite fun, murdering everything that I found.
The main security guy
in
that mission, the chief lieutenant or whatever?
Yeah.
I thought he was Ramsay Bolton from Game of Thrones, because he looks like him and kind of sounds like him, but then I checked and it's not him.
I hadn't noticed that, but thinking back on it, yeah, I can see where you thought that.
Yeah, I was wrong.
He's got a very plush office, I've got to say.
He does, yeah. It's fancy. It's good being the head of not Bell Tower.
Yeah.
Actually, the thing I really like from that mission is the sort of PR instruction email that's like, look, okay, we're not Bell Tower. If people don't ever refer to us as Bell Tower, if journalists want to call us Bell Tower, then, you know, guide them towards calling us, what are they called now? I've forgotten. It was a T, right?
Yeah.
They're Bell Tower. So it doesn't matter.
I kind of wanted to say Talon or something like that, but I think I'm getting confused with Talos Rocket.
Talon? Yeah. Not sure. Anyway, then.
And it's not Tarsus, that mission, because that was Invisible War.
That mission, by the way, is could very easily have been in the main game and probably should have been. Maybe they have a good reason.
The sense that it
totally could have been.
I think that it would have broken the pacing a little bit more than it already is, honestly, because that would have it would have come around the point where you've just used the train to pinch a 3D model of the area from the police. Have gone from that bit, and it would have been another mission where you go on the train to a station that's under lockdown and break into a place.
True. I mean, it's useful. You get somewhat useful information from it, though, that, you know, regarding who the bomber is or isn't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You had to pull something out for a pre-order mission, Tim. It's a bit like the Tracer Tong one from Human Revolution, which was sort of pretty inconsequential and not very long.
Yeah, well, that was a side quest anyway, wasn't it?
I think that was a pre-order one. I think
yes, but I mean, what I mean was that was a side quest. It wasn't story critical or anything like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was.
Whereas this, I don't know, I get the sense it probably would have been a story critical one just because of the whole get on the train to a unique location, but maybe not. It could probably have functioned as a side quest. I'm not too fussed about having it removed from the game. I think the game has a couple of issues with pacing anyway.
It's also not short of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a short game, despite the fact that it kind of
feels like
there's another game's worth of stuff to go into.
Yeah.
There's a good 20 plus hours there, especially if you play it fairly stealthily and carefully and examine stuff, as most people who like these games probably will.
That's kind of one of the sad things about it, is that the stuff that you find, like the little environmental bits and pieces, are far more interesting than the critical path of the game. And that is that's my fundamental problem with Mankind Divided, and honestly it's probably the only real problem I have with it, is that the critical path is a bit boring. It's got some good set pieces and so on, but it's got a plot that feels a bit unfinished and doesn't make a great deal of sense, and characters that are very poorly developed, whereas the side quest stuff has more interesting characters and side plots and a lot more information about the world and so on and so forth, which is
from a selfish point of view. The other thing I don't like about it is that it worked pretty much near flawlessly for me pre-release, and then it launched and everyone was having horrible crashing issues, which made all of the praise I gave it look slightly silly.
I had, over the course of, let me see how much I've played it, because I've got Steam open, I played 31 hours, and I think it crashed twice for me in all of that time.
I have 26 or 27 hours and it crashed once.
So,
which I consider to be perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, likewise.
As these things go.
I think one of those was after a very long period of gaming, and it was like, I think I'd basically been meaning to go to bed for like the past 2 hours, and I was like, oh, I'll just do a bit more. And then I found the quest regarding Eliza Kazan. I was like, oh, I'll just go and meet this person and see what they want. And then I left that place and walked out, and it crashed as I was wandering down the street. And I was like, okay, I'll go to bed. And yeah, other than that, it crashed once. I actually thought the PC port was really good, honestly.
Yeah, I do. There's a couple of things that annoyed me, like when you use hotkeys to open stuff like map or whatever, I like to be able to press that key again to close it rather than having to press escape or whatever. But it's not. That's the kind of caliber of things that were upsetting me about it, though. In general, it has lots of great options. It's pretty scalable.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the other thing. A lot of people seem to be having performance. I had some performance stuttering and stuff, but I'm also slightly below the recommended spec. Sure. So I was kind of thinking, well, all right, fair enough. It's performing about as well as I would hope and expect. So yeah, then when I see other people with quality graphics cards going it doesn't hold 60 FPS at 1080p, and I'm like, well, it should do. That's a bit weird.
Yeah.
Again, making my praise look a bit silly.
I mean, running it on...
It's tough.
I went through 2/3 of the game on high, which was what it defaulted to, and it was basically constant 60 FPS. It would occasionally drop to about 50, 55. It wasn't particularly noticeable, and that was never a point when it mattered. On very high, the drops were a little bit more noticeable, but it was still, again, entirely playable. And ultra was basically 60 FPS with regular drops to about 25, which was really noticeable and not very playable.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultra activates an awful lot of pretty demanding stuff.
And I wasn't expecting ultra. I mean, I left it on high because I basically figured that would probably be about the best I could get anyway. I was quite pleased to discover that I could run it fine on very high. Fine.
I like it when PC versions include a bunch of stuff that, in the ultra range where, most PCs aren't going to be able to handle this for a few years. Put them in anyway, that's fine.
Yeah.
But the downside is you get a few people who try to use it and then go, oh, it's a shit port, it doesn't run very well. I'm not saying that's everyone who's having performance issues, by the way. Some people absolutely know what they're doing with graphics settings and are still having some weird problems, and that's a shame.
I mean, Nexus
are pretty good at supporting their games, so...
What a shame. Yeah, I do wonder if it's the vocal minority as much as anything, like the boards and the internet is being dominated by complaints from,
Well, I mean, obviously, if you have some issues with it, then you're going to be posting about it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't, you probably aren't, because you're probably just going to be playing.
The difficulty is knowing how widespread the issues are. They're certainly prominent, but some people are always going to encounter these issues. That's basically the nature of PC versions of games.
The crashing after the Prague bombing scene seems to have been a pretty big one that they...
Yes.
The patch yesterday was to address that, which hopefully did for most or all people. I don't know, but...
Which neither of us hit.
No, well, exactly, you see. It's the kind of thing that I will... This is also the problem when you're doing a kind of technical port review.
Yeah.
You can basically only... I can only talk for my own experience,
And in this case, my experience as well.
Yeah, sure.
But we basically had a similar experience. It's a fine port with a couple of little bugs. Annoyances.
Right. Yeah. The whole... I can't believe they still have the pressing space to come out of a loading thing will jump you out of cover.
Yeah,
I was sure they were going to address that before it launched, but no.
Yeah, I figured that would be one of the sort of the last minute quality assurance fixes, and I'm not a coder, but I can't imagine that would be too hard to fix in terms of adding a couple of lines of code that basically say that it should disregard all inputs before you've pressed the spacebar.
Yeah, or just change it to a different key that you have to press that isn't space. Even that would probably work too.
I've tried pressing return and clicking and stuff, and they don't work. So yeah.
I mean, obviously you can rebind space if you want, but I kind of like having space for cover. So
I did up until I think I started trying to play Hitman again as that came out. Bangkok appeared around the time, and it was like, oh, this is confusing. The button to go into cover is different.
Yeah. All right, well, conclusion time. Mankind Divided is mechanically a very good immersive sim, if you want to use that genre terminology. You know, falls into the kind of Dishonored, Human Revolution camp, those types of games.
Yep.
And, you know, on that basis, I think it's extremely good.
Yep.
But for the other stuff that we've kind of covered in this podcast, it doesn't hit Human Revolution's heights for me. I mean, that's partly because Human Revolution was bringing back Deus Ex after such a long time.
Sure.
And nailed it so well that a sort of direct sequel is going to struggle to make the same kind of impact, I think.
Yeah, that's fair.
But it's not just that. That's not the only reason that this is not quite up to that game standards. It is also a bit of the plot stuff.
Yeah, there are a few disappointments in there. The plot isn't wonderful, as we discussed, despite how good a lot of the side areas, side characters and so on are. I mean, I want more MacReady.
Maybe we could get DLC where you play as MacReady.
I doubt it.
Oh.
If only because I think that those side quests are called Jensen stories or something like that.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe MacReady's telling Jensen the story.
Also, he doesn't have augmentations.
No, but he could maybe do other stuff.
True.
He could just yell at people to distract them.
Yeah, fine.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's...
I think you're almost certainly correct that it's only going to be Jensen stuff.
I don't have a problem recommending Mankind Divided because most of the disappointments, as it sounds, are fairly minor. It almost feels episodic in terms of talking about the plot, like trying to discuss the plot of The Wolf Among Us back in episode 2 of that, because a lot of it kind of hinges on stuff that we don't know about.
I can see this, yeah. I can see when I have more context to this stuff, I can see it seeming better.
Yes.
In a weird kind of way.
That's basically, yeah. I mean, I have no hesitation in recommending this. I think it's a fantastic game.
No.
The key word there being game, I think.
absolutely.
I can't say I was... I don't think I was disappointed at any real point. Like, don't get me wrong, in hindsight, yeah, we complained quite a lot about the plots, the characters, and so on. But
well, I mean, that's the nature of this kind of podcast.
Yes.
I mean, there's no point doing an hour long going, God, the mission design's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it is.
it's really more critiquing, I suppose. There is an awful lot of good stuff in there. As I say, talking in hindsight about that stuff, yeah, it's a bit rubbish, but it didn't impinge my enjoyment any. I played it for, 31 hours or whatever it was, and I would happily do that again. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, we in a rare turn of events, we got the review code early.
I get the sense that was probably because Gamescom was floating around and they wanted to make sure people had time to review it.
But despite that, I still went through it, in like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't need to. I didn't actually have to go that fast for once. But I wanted to, which is,
It is. It was.
Should say enough about the compulsion that I had to finish it.
Yeah, it was. I wasn't disappointed by it at all. I thought it was a really good game, and it is one that I will probably go back and play again, much as I did Human Revolution.
Indeed.
Unlike Invisible War. I don't know. I don't know whether I would.
Would you like to say something about Invisible War?
Not really. I just find it unplayable, horribly designed, with terrible characters and plot decisions, an awful user interface, some awful mechanical choices like the universal ammo. So no, I don't really want to talk about it.
But other than that, you love it.
Other than all of the problems it has, which is 90% of it, it's a really good game. Full 10%. It's great. I don't know whether I would rate Mankind Divided above Human Revolution. I think that it's probably still too soon to say. I think I would say that I prefer Human Revolution, but by the same token, I also suspect I might have difficulty going back to Human Revolution. Due to a lot of the refinements that Mankind Divided made.
I agree. I'm comparing Mankind Divided to a lot of my memories and good feelings about Human Revolution, whereas if I went back to it and saw what the Detroit hub actually looks like,
it has a person
like 20 times better than
this. It has a person doing breakdancing and you can tap him on the shoulder and punch him in the face.
Well, that's obviously an all-time classic piece of Deus Ex history now.
But yeah, Mankind Divided is, I think, it's a really good game. As I've said several times in this, I have no hesitation in recommending it. It is really good. If you want to play a Deus Ex game, you will enjoy this Deus Ex game.
Yeah, that's a good place to leave it.
I think so.
Thanks for listening to our Deus Ex Mankind Divided ramblings, everybody. We'll be back with a more normal podcast maybe next week or the week after.
Whenever Peter feels like it.
Pretty much, yes. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
We've had to endure much, you and I, but within the week, there will be old men running the world.
No, within 6 months.
Yes. Old men are the future.